Welcome back. I'm Gary Parr.
And I'm Beth Ellicott.
And this is the midweek version of Fiber Talk, the twice-weekly podcast for ground cloth stabbers.
For stabbing day, huh?
We're going to stab today. Yep.
Okay.
I got house projects coming up. You know how those go. Simple. Then you open up the program and then,
It's a big one.
The dominoes fall and pretty soon it's evening and you're not done. All right. So no stitch hour tonight. We're doing this podcast today because there's no stitch hour tonight, which will be Wednesday night before Thanksgiving. Cause mainly Marg and I are going to church. So, that's pretty much why.
Right.
We'll have a stitch hour next Wednesday though.
I'm picking up my daughter too, so that would be really hard too on the road.
Might be fun, but no.
Bad reception. No.
So we'll have a stitch hour next week, and Sunday's guest will be textile artist Brittany Kurtzner. Does some interesting work, so look for that.
Yeah.
And all right, so I'm still, my wheels are still spinning over Sunday's guest, Roberta Wagner.
She was so interesting. I went back and I got about halfway through before I got interrupted re-listening. And I don't normally re-listen to the podcast.
I don't either.
But I was like, oh yeah, I remember her talking about that. It was just fascinating. And talking about making ugly work, you know, you made a note of that. And so I thought, I can't remember that. I've got to go back and listen. That's what prompted this.
Yep.
And I thought, that is so true. We need to be making ugly work.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought I noted that when she was talking about it, because she was basing it on Nancy Hillis, an artist, Nancy Hillis. I've got to go explore her website now. And one of her books is The Artist's Journey. But she talks about doing, according to Roberta, doing a half hour of art every day, whether it's ugly or not. And if it's ugly, just put it away and come back to it at some later time.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, as most needle workers are just sitting there doing what the design calls for. But even then, if you do something, you're just not excited about it, put it away and come back. And sometimes, why didn't I finish this? And and if you're trying to change something, if you say different colors and it's just not working, do it ugly. And then at least you got a point of reference,
Right. And I took it too as learning a new technique.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be pretty the first time out.
Yeah.
It just isn't. You're learning, but that's the point. So you'll get better at it if you practice it, but you won't know if you like it until you try it. So, take a half hour and try learning something, doing a little bit of a stitch, whatever, on a doodle cloth.
Yeah. It was licensed to just make something that you don't want anyone else to see. Just go for it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. If your white work's all wonky and there's ends sticking out in your cluster blocks and, your dove's eyes are all out of whack. So what, go for it. Learn something. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And to get better, the more you practice it. And then the fact of doing it a half hour every day. It's sort of that, I think sometimes we lead very, very busy lives. And, to take that 30 minutes to just say, okay, I'm going to stitch on this for 30 minutes. I'm going to set a little timer. I'm going to give myself this little break. And that was the other thing that intrigued me. She does it every day for 30 minutes.
Yeah. And, yeah. Doing something. Yes.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, a practice I still can't seem to get into my schedule, but
I think that personality there, personality.
I keep plugging away. I keep trying. That's all right. I can say. Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, so listen to Roberta Wagner this past Sunday. She's a textile artist. But what is so powerful about that interview, I'm really, really glad we did it, because she has such good insight into the creative process and being willing to ask the question, what if, and just go for it. Right. And her approach, her intuitive artist approach is so fascinating to me. I remember one video on her website where she just starts with this big, oh, we got to talk about washi paper too. But she just lays out a big piece of paper on a board and then takes like a paint or an ink or something and just makes a swipe. And that's her start.
Mm-hmm.
And then she just lets her hands build from there. And I thought, well, yeah, every time I see that, because I went back to her site several times in the research, it was like, what a freeing thing, right, mentally. Just make a swipe and then go from there. What am I going to build off of that? And yeah, it's amazing, amazing. And of course, she has the talent to do something with it. But even if you don't feel talented, at least give it a run. So,
right, yeah. Right, yeah. So yeah, and then she mentioned washi paper, and that just intrigued me because I was like, okay, what's washi? I've heard of washi tape. Washi tape I use in scrapbooking and, journaling and things, but I hadn't heard of washi paper. And I sent a note to one of my textile friends and I said, washi paper. And she goes, is that like mulberry paper? And I thought it was, but I have a roll here and it's not. We haven't played with it yet. That's next Tuesday after Thanksgiving, but it's thicker. It's got a, it feels kind of like mulberry paper, but that's not got the fibers in it that you see in mulberry paper, for those of you who've ever played with that.
So dumb guy questions here. First, she gave us a company in Toronto, I believe it was. Is that where you ordered it?
No, believe it or not, I got this off of Walmart. I could get a roll mailed to my house. I know. I was surprised. Well, and the problem was the Toronto was, shipping.
It's yeah.
Like, okay, well, that's nice, but I'm not to play with this. I just need something to play with. I want to see what it's like. And the roll was the cheapest way to go. So, I ordered it from Walmart.
Okay. All right. So this is a question that comes to my mind now. All right. You got it from Walmart.
Yes.
That suggests a level of quality.
No, it's actually, I was kind of worried about that.
Yeah.
It's made in Japan. It's washi paper. It's marked washi paper. It's thicker than mulberry paper. So mulberry paper, it comes in different thicknesses, and it used to be really easy to find in art supply stores. But I don't have a local art supply store anymore that I know of. I think they've all closed. The closest one maybe would be Blix in Iowa City.
Oh.
And so they might have it. Dick Blix might carry this. I didn't even check them. Oh, I guess there's one in Galesburg too. If you hear paper rustling, I'm touching this washi paper now. So it feels, I can't rip it by pulling on it. I mean, just like kind of, sometimes if you pull washi paper like from the two corners and you pull, you can kind of pull it apart without much strength. This one you can't. It's made,
oh, you mean if you pull on mulberry paper?
Mulberry paper. This yeah. Washi paper is, you can't do that. It's made to draw on, to print with.
Oh, okay.
It's got a nice smooth surface for doing that.
That was the other thing. I wondered if it was a smooth or a very textured surface. So it's really smooth, no.
Smooth. And mulberry paper tends to be more textured.
Okay.
Does have a smooth side and a rough side, so you can choose what you're going to do. But I know we're going to go play with it, so I'm going to bring my it's called a jelly plate, which is something you use for mono printing. It's a gelatin plate, and you could put paint on it, you put images on, and you can get mono prints off of it, full mono prints. And we're going to try that. I know that's one thing we're going to do with this. Then we'll probably spray ink on it. I don't think we might have some dye still at the library that's mixed up. We might try it, and then we'll let it dry, and then we'll see what we can if we can stitch through it. Will be the next.
Oh, okay, okay. So it's just literally play with this, see how it behaves, and what we can do to it.
Right, right. And then use it, you know, see where we can use it in projects that we've started, or you know, just use a little bit. Like Roberta Wagner was talking about how she was doing these small ones.
Yeah.
And I thought that was very intriguing, you know, because I tend to do huge projects. I'm thinking, what if I did something just small with this washi paper and some of the other things I have, and just play with those.
Mm-hmm.
I can do with that. But anyway, yeah. So
okay, so a roll, how wide? A couple feet?
It is, I can tell you, 18 inches by 30 feet.
By 30 feet, okay. So you got plenty. You got plenty to play with.
Right, right. And to share with my friends.
Right.
Because we'll play together.
So that just sounds like a really fun session. So you just cut up some paper, lay it out on tables, and just make a mess and see what happens.
Right, right. And there's no expectation that, you know, we don't have to use it. Like, we look at it. There's been times we've made tons of paper. We've looked at each other and like, okay, now we have all this paper. What are we going to do? We all take it home. And then maybe the next time we get together, we bring it back and we swap it out. So I get someone else's.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of fun when you work with another group of people. And my friend Cheryl, we've had her on the show.
Right.
She just finished setting up an exhibit at the airport of some dresses that she did. And she will use these things in her daily art practice. She uses them a lot. So it's kind of fun to see what she does with them. And I find it very inspiring. But it's just playing. It's just taking time to play.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What fun. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to how it works out. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then, this mystery paper, you were able to get a roll at Walmart. Who would have thought?
Who would have guessed? And I think if it's something that we like using, you know, I'm more curious to see how it stitches. You know, what the stitches will do.
Yeah.
Then we might say, okay, let's look at investing at different quality of this paper, because
right.
This is probably a lower end. It's not going to be as nice as what maybe Roberta used, but it's a good starting point.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Yeah. And if it's garbage and doesn't work out, then you don't feel like you're throwing away mountains of money. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Very cool. Yeah. All right. Oh, maybe we need to have a tour of the airport exhibit.
Ooh. Ooh.
Think about that.
All right.
I'll put that out there. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Mm-hmm. On the Sassy Jacks web Facebook page, somebody posted that they were interested in trying some gold work.
Mm-hmm.
And so I responded. Kim responded that she had just looked into it and really didn't have anybody. So I responded and said that Natalie Dupuy and Clara Warschauer were the two that I would go to for gold work. And there are others. I mean, we've had several on. You know, there are others. But those two currently, you know, just came to mind quickly. But then it was a couple of days later I realized that also, if you're going to start gold work, you almost should have a reference book.
Yes.
And then that reminded me of Allison Cole's Gold Work Masterclass book.
Yes.
And, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. We in fact, when I started doing Clara's classes, I really did not have a gold work book. And then she sends you with all the, she sent extras. And
right.
I'm looking at these things and I'm thinking, okay, what do I do with this thing? So any of those books, you look at the back and it says like gold plate and it shows you examples of how to use them. So yeah, reference book is invaluable.
Yeah. And the Allison Cole one, the title is the Goldwork Masterclass. And that's a bit deceiving because you think, oh, this is all advanced stuff. It's not. She takes you right from most basic techniques all the way through to advanced stuff and shows you how to do it and explains. It's an excellent book. And then I was thinking, well, all right, other gold work people we've talked to, and then Tracy Franklin came up, and her book, New Ideas in Gold Work, is another good one to have. And that one also talks about the basics, the materials, how to couch, and those kinds of things. So that yeah, that's really useful. And then if you go to the FiberTalk website, Natalie Dupuy has we've had more than one discussion with her, and there are, I don't know, three or four other gold work people, Allison Cole being one of them, we've talked to. And then Natalie did a Wednesday night show with us, a live session. So you would go to the YouTube channel and look in the live section for Natalie, and she did some basic demonstration for us. Mm-hmm. And so that that might be helpful. But yeah, there's lots of resources, but I think a good book is essential if you're going to start trying that, just because you never know on a Sunday night when you're working and you hit a problem. If you have a good book to turn to, it's really handy. So,
right. And then the other one I would recommend is even the Kay Stannis has a really good book. And she has classes, like if you're looking for classes too, EGA offers goldwork classes, a whole series. If you want to become a master craftsman in it yourself, you can go through the steps through EGA and do that.
Yeah. Yeah. A
place to look.
And Kay Stannis, her last name is Stannis, if you want to look her up.
Yeah. Yes.
She's rather talented too.
Yes.
Just as a general statement, she's rather talented.
Yes. Very creative. Yeah.
But yeah, check those out. And you're exactly right. For that, if you want some classes and some resources, you know, join the EGA. You know, once again, join the EGA. They will help you. There's help there for all levels and all techniques. It's a great resource. Well worth it. Mm-hmm. Yep. So, so that just came up, and then you know I was riding my bike when these things come to my mind, and I thought, oh, people need to know about a good book. So Allison Cole, Stannis, Tracy Franklin, there are others. I mean, there are plenty of them. But those two I happen to own, so I could actually look at them and see if they were useful. So anyway, that's good. And what Cindy and I have signed up for Clara's Goldfish class. I got my materials the other day.
Yeah. See, and so far I am resisting. I do know someone else who, after you all mentioned it, has signed up for the Goldberg Koi class. So
who is that?
Mary.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. And she's like, you're not doing it. And I'm like, no, I must say no to something.
Beth is holding out on this one. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. But okay. Wait, let me rephrase that. So, Clara is showing on her Instagram page that she's bagging, supplies. And I was like, ooh, that looks like fun. And she goes, well, you know, you might be very interested in this one. I'm like, oh, no. So I might be glad I resisted the koi class, and I might be signing up for a different one.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was watching an Instagram, a Claire Warshauer Instagram, where she's just playing with goldwork threads as she's getting them ready for packaging and stuff. And it seems like a fun day to me, just lay out a whole bunch of goldwork threads and then cut them up and just, yeah. Mm-hmm. Nice mindless work with some pretty threads. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Jamie from California wrote to us. This is interesting. All right. So Jamie from California wrote, said some very kind words about FiberTalk, how much she enjoys us and listens all the time and the stitch hours. And so we appreciate that. But she's a needle pointer and would like to try some cross stitch. Okay, so you think, well, go for it. But then her next statement was that there's so much information that it's almost overwhelming. Can we help? And that, you know, that stopped me right in my tracks. And you could start, you know, you start to think, yeah. Yeah, I could see where that's overwhelming. Where do I jump in?
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so that becomes then a legit question. And this is an experienced needleworker. But where, right. Yeah, where do you dive in? And I thought, okay, all right, that's worth talking about. So you start to think, all right, well, if you had somebody who'd never stitched before, you would go through the basics, but you don't need to really do that with her because right. She certainly knows how to do a start a thread, end a thread, needle, you know, thread a needle, that kind of basic stuff.
Right. Right. But my question was, is she a needle pointer who does painted canvases and does them mainly with basket weave? Cause then I think the issue might be reading the chart. Does she do stitches from, does she know how to read a chart?
Yeah.
Because people find that confusing. I was trying to teach someone who does cross stitch how to start a needlepoint pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured, oh, that this is, you know, she knows how to read a chart. This should be easy. Well, not exactly. So there is some translation between the two that kind of messes with, you know, it's hard for people to move from one to the other, I have discovered.
Yeah, see, and that's interesting now for those of us who do multiple techniques, we don't think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you've never done cross stitch in this case, what is over one and over two?
Right.
What does that mean? Because if you look at a chart and you see a stitch, well, it's not always clear that you're doing it over, you're supposed to do it over two threads or over one thread.
Right.
And, you know, the default is over two, but then if it says do this section over one, well, what does that mean?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And then, you know, how many threads do you use for a, it depends is of course the answer, right?
But I hate that answer.
I know. You know, do you use one thread or use two or do you use three? And again, I think it's a matter of personal preference, but there are guidelines for those things, you know?
Yeah.
But I can imagine it is very overwhelming.
Yeah. All right. So let's help Jamie out here. Let's start with the ground cloth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Experience. Now, if it was someone who had never done cross stitch, never done needlework at all, we would suggest for cross stitch, I think we would, at least I would suggest, and I think you would agree, that they start with an Aida cloth.
Correct.
Because that, it's very clear where the thread goes. There's no doubt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for every square, there's four holes, and you know, your cross has to go in, you have to fill up the four holes, basically.
Right.
But now, would you give that same advice to an experienced needleworker?
Yes.
Okay.
And the reason is, think of what they're using for their ground. You're using something that's got very obvious holes in your needle point,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And so you can see on Aida, you fill those holes in. Whereas on linen, what confuses people is there's those extra ones. And I would just start and say, we're going to just do a real basic. I'm going to teach you, you know, the basic stitch, how to read the chart. And this is going to be, you know, it's just a practice piece. And then if they are comfortable with it, move them to a linen.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So you pick up a chart and you see an X or you see a block
symbol
filled in,
right,
with a symbol, which of course, then that's a whole other thing is symbols, and they indicate what color to use.
Right.
That's pretty straightforward. But then, all right, so if you're doing on Aida, then you are making one stitch over one grid block.
Correct.
That's pretty straightforward. If you're going to do linen, then it's over two threads. So there's a hole in the middle of each X. Right?
Correct. Right. Yeah. Correct. And where do you start? That's the other question. How do you start where do you start on a chart?
Right. Yeah. And see, and that's what you can see now when she says that the information is so overwhelming,
right?
Because everybody has their opinion. For me, it's upper left always, unless the designer says start in the middle or start somewhere else for design reasons, and then I follow their instructions because every time I haven't, I've paid the price. Mm-hmm. But otherwise, it's top left. Other people always start dead center.
Right.
All right. Well, what's top left?
Right. So, and again, I normally start in the top left, except if I'm teaching somebody, then I generally, we find the middle, and I show, and I try to, generally it's a heart. We've taught a cross stitch heart to people several times because it's an easy, we have two colors on it. It's the center color and then in like an outline color. And so it has two color symbols, but it's a big block of color. And we teach them to go, how to start with a waist knot, start in the center, count over however many stitches to get to the one edge, and then start doing your cross stitches. Because if they have to count down from an edge to get to that first lump on that heart, they get very frustrated if it's off.
Yeah.
But if I start in the center, I know I've given them a big enough piece of cloth that it's going to fit in there, and then, it'll work.
Yeah.
Because nothing is worse than starting something and realizing you do not have enough fabric.
Yes. Yeah, and for Jamie, the amount of fabric is the same as you would do for needlepoint. Your design size, and then 2 or 3 inches on each side. I prefer 3. 2 or 3 inches on each side so that you have excess ground cloth for the framer or for the finisher, whatever you're going to be doing. But, right. So the stitches are always given on the chart. X number of stitches across, across and down. And then that it depends on what the count is for your ground cloth, what the thread count is, if it's 14 or 16 or 18 or 22 threads per inch or stitches per inch, then that dictates how big it's actually going to be. But usually the charts explain all that. It's usually on the back somewhere.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I think if I was no matter if they were an experienced needle pointer or doing embroidery, I would always start with something that's very, very simple, and you either one color or two colors just to get the idea.
Yeah.
And small, something you can either finish, or if you don't finish, you don't care.
Right. Right.
Okay. Learn the basics. I know how to do this. I'm going to go get the project I really want to do.
Right. Yeah. Well, and I would, yeah, exactly. And don't pay for a chart. If you want to test, don't pay for a chart. Most designers offer free charts. And my go-to would be Avalia Folk Embroidery. Krista West has, there's probably, I don't know, a dozen, 15 free charts on her website. And what's nice about hers is a lot of them are repetitive patterns. So you don't have to work real hard to figure out how it goes, and you can see if you enjoy cross-stitch. Don't pay for a chart. Just get one of these free ones and test it to see if you enjoy the technique. Right. And then if you do, then you start to look at, all right, I'm going to buy this chart because that's really what I want to do. But at least try it first. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And now Krista at AvaliaFolkEmbroidery.com, she has them and they all say that they're a dollar. And that has to be because of the shopping cart thing. You can't put in a $0 thing. But then there's a code or there's something in the instructions that tell you, so you it's free. It's free. When you go to checkout, it just makes it free. And then you download the PDF and you have it. Yeah, but there, and most designers have free charts. They're small ones, and a lot of them are single color or two color at the most. And so you can just get one and try it. And you buy a small piece of cloth, and a lot of shops will have a scrap cloth in a basket that, you know, it's the end off of a yard that after they cut out for customers, here's a piece that you can pick up for, you know, just a couple of bucks. Grab a couple of those and use those. So you're not investing a ton of money in a technique you don't even know if you'll like.
And just use, and I would just get DMC or some sort of floss that you have, and just go for it. It's, you know, you're just learning something, you're learning to play, and you might as well, you don't want to invest a lot of money in it. You just want to, you want to try something out.
Right. Right.
It doesn't need to be silk or over dyed or whatever. It just needs to be just a skein of some couple of colors at the most.
Right. Yeah. And I wouldn't even worry about getting the colors that are listed on the chart. Just get a couple colors that semi go together and just experience cross stitching.
Right.
And then, yeah. All right. Oh, I enjoy doing this. This is nice to do while watching TV, or it's just relaxing or whatever. All right. Now you get a chart and you start to get the colors and you start to play the game. But, you know, nothing worse than laying out $50 and go, oh, geez, I don't care if I ever do this again.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, there it is. Thanks a lot.
Yeah. The other thing I would suggest too is I don't know where Jamie lives in California, but a lot of I know Bestitch Me has a Saturday where she opens up for a stitching group, and they're cross stitchers mainly. So that would be something I would inquire about. See if a local shop has a stitching day where you could go and say, I really want to learn how to do cross stitch. Especially if you're very nervous about teaching yourself a technique, and seeing if they can get you hooked up with someone to help you, or you're like our local guild, the EGA, like Cindy has sat and taught people cross stitch at places. We would help people at our guild. They came in and said, hey, I want to know how to do this. We'd figure it out. We'd find a way. We'd say, okay, you have to wait till we're done with our little business meeting, our program, but we'll sit down with you. We'll have someone sit with you, and we'll just work with you till you get this down. Because we want people to learn. It's our passion, you know,
right.
To teach needlework. But yeah, for a small investment, you know, you get a lot of hours of fun out of it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then we mentioned about the number of strands of thread, and that's, you know, that's a thing. As a needle pointer, she's probably worked with Karen collections where you pull out strands. There's X number of strands of thread, and you don't use the whole thing because it's a big thick rope. DMC floss, you strand too. You pull out the strands, and then depending on the thread count or of your ground cloth, you might use one if it's a very high thread count, or two or three. And yeah, like you mentioned, it depends. Well, a lot of times you can just test.
Right.
It'll say on the chart, but test to see if it covers. Does one strand cover in an X cover your ground cloth the way you like it? If not, then go to two strands. And if not, then go to three, but, usually one or two and see, because everybody likes it different. Sometimes people like it very full and bulky, and other times people like a little ground cloth to show through. It just depends. So, that's the playing around part.
Right. And then it also depends on your own personal attention. Again,
yes.
If you've a lot of needlepoint, you're doing certain stitches, it'll say three or four strands. Well, because it depends on how you lay them, you know, how you work the stitch. So if you have really tight tension, then you might need to use three strands versus like me, I can some, if I'm a little looser and it, I can get it to lay correctly, I can do just two. So again, that it depends on your tension. I've found too.
Right.
So if you're, you just need to be watching that. It's the same as needlepoint. Tension makes a difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's not unusual for needle pointers to use fairly good tension. So you might find you need to ease up on the ball planes there.
Right. You don't want to be making, cause if you pull linen, you'll have pulled work and,
right.
Instead of a cross stitch, you'll have little holes.
Yeah, you'll quickly discover that it's pretty easy to collapse the linen threads right on top of each other right. If you use standard needlepoint tension. But yeah, that's something that I know for me, if I do needlepoint for an extended period of time and then go to do cross stitch on linen, ooh, I have to be really conscious of the tension because I want to pull it tight and no. But yeah, that's tension is kind of critical. Then the other thing was whether to make full X's or half X's, because different people do it differently.
Right.
And so, like, if you have a field of five rows of one color that are 10 stitches wide, you know, 10 stitches and five rows of it, then you might go through and make half of an X, like a tent stitch, and then come back in that same row and finish it off with the full X. Some people are taught that way, and some people prefer that. Other people will make a full X with each stitch as they go across. And
right.
That's the way I do it 90% of the time. Sometimes, you know, what you're doing, a half stitch, like if I'm doing a branch on a tree, just a single stitch branch, then I'll do half stitches all the way out to the end and then come all the way back to the trunk, with the other stitch. So I'm back at the base with my thread rather than hanging out there at the end of the branch. But in general, I make a full X every time. Yeah.
See, and I don't. I like going back and forth.
Okay.
I know it makes a difference on how it looks. But every time I try to just do an X, I find myself going back to doing rows of them.
Interesting.
I think it's, yeah. You know, and there are times when you're trying to get around a motif, I'll do singles. But most of the time, I go back and forth like a typewriter. And except if I'm doing something with a variegated thread, and then generally I make each X.
Yeah.
Just to keep the variegation in. But
yeah, you have to really. Yeah.
Right.
That's interesting. Okay. Cause see, I used to do half and come back. And then I just got to the point where I just did the full X's and works better for me. And you know, that's, you can see now why Jamie, you know, it's overwhelming. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Right. And it's especially, you know, you get a bunch of different people doing it a bunch of different ways. And you're like, which way's right? Well, there's not a needlepoint police or a needlework police going to come to your house and say, well, I'm sorry, you made your X's individually. That's wrong. And we're going to just fine you. Now, if you want to do it in shows, I think it does look better if you do each X individually. It makes them, I think it's easier to get more consistent in your stitching. But I don't know why I can't do it. It's just my brain. I do it for a little while and think, and then I go back to doing typewriter. I'm like, wait. All right. So anyway.
That's interesting. Yeah. Yeah. No, Moses did not come down from the mountain with a tablet with the 15 rules of cross stitch. No.
No.
You do it the way it works for you.
Right.
And right. People may suggest other ways, and you're welcome to try them, but do it your way.
Right. And the only real, and use air quotes, the only real rule is the top stitch should be the same direction.
Yes.
On the whole piece. Now, on needlepoint, Gayon breaks that because, you know, she's you have to watch her patterns, and that's needlepoint. She'll have her little half tense, you know, her tense stitch, and you're like, wait, that's going – I was stitching along, and this is going the other direction in her pattern. But she does that to get it to look a certain way.
Right.
So that's the only reason you do that is that, you know, and we all – I know I found an old piece of mine where, I don't know, it was 11, 12, something. And I was like, I looked at it and I was like, oh yeah, look at all those stitches going in different directions. I don't think that made it out of my mom's house. I think I ended up throwing that one away before I brought it back. So
yeah,
it's like, okay, I don't need to see that one anymore.
Yep. Yeah. 99% of the time, the top stitch of the X always goes the same direction. Unless there's an artistic reason. And I have thought about that when we were kind of putting this together. Mm-hmm. I think somewhere along the way, I'm going to try changing the direction in a piece just to see what happens visually.
Well, where I think it would make a difference is the light will reflect off the thread differently.
Right.
So it's like, okay, so where would you use that?
Let's just take a reproduction sampler. Sorry, Jamie, tangent. Ignore all this. Just take a motif in a reproduction sampler. A pot or a house. Take a house because it's easy. All right. So here's a big block for the front of the house. What if I do the roof and make the top X go the other direction?
Mm-hmm.
What does that do visually? Yes. And that's it. It changes the way the light hits the thread. Does that create an interesting visual effect?
Right.
I think it's worth playing with.
Right. Well, that brings me to, you know, I didn't put this on our list, so here's another tangent.
Well, we can't talk about it. It's not on the list.
Sorry. We're going to talk about it. Jeanette Kirtland by Queenstown Sampler Designs is going to be a sal with Sassy Jack Stitchery. And there's these huge houses at the bottom. And I keep thinking, I signed up for this with these huge houses. What was I thinking? But I'm thinking about that. I was thinking, well, can't I do a different stitch? But you're right. Maybe making the X's in a different direction.
Yep.
That might really make it interesting.
Okay. All right. Take your big house and every window frame, you make the X go in the other direction.
Yeah. Or just the whole window.
Yep.
The whole window, because then it would look like maybe the light was reflecting from it.
Right. Yeah. What happens?
Yeah.
Okay.
Would it bug us though?
Well, I don't know. You know, it might. And mm-hmm. and of course, then you know, the purists say, "Oh, you changed your X's." Yeah, I did. You're right. I did. Yeah.
I did. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Good observation.
Yep.
And I like the way it looks. No, yeah. I think that's worth playing with. Because you know, we just robot-like make all the X's go the same way, but there's no rules. So
no.
Choose an element and change it. See what happens.
Right, right. And I've got all those houses to do.
Yeah.
I got to make it interesting somehow, right?
Right, yeah, because otherwise yeah, X after X after X, yeah.
I know. Yeah.
Yep. So, all right, back to Jamie. Jamie, ignore that part, okay? just ignore that part. So we should sum this up. So just go get some pieces of Aida cloth, AIDA, at your local needlework store, and there's invariably a basket of them. And right. You don't really care what the color is. You don't care. Just get something cheap.
Right. Wait. You don't want black.
Or oh, no. Yeah, don't get black.
Black or navy blue. Don't do those two colors because you'll go crazy. But, yeah.
White. Light yellow, light blue, off-white, something like that. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
You already have the needles. You probably have more than your share of DMC floss, so that's not a problem. Right. Download Avlia Folk Embroidery is a really good place to have several choices, but you can go to other designers, and they invariably have one or two free charts. Download that. That's a PDF. Print it out. That way you're not spending any money on it to see if you like it. You have the needles. You can do it in hand. You can do it in a hoop.
Right.
You don't need to go invest a bunch of money. You can do it really anyway, but to start out, you can just simply do it in hand. You don't need to have anything to hold the ground cloth. And then just go for it.
Right.
It's a test. You're seeing if you like it. You know, just go in a couple inches from the top and the bottom on a piece of, on your piece of cloth and start stitching. See if you like it. And the patterns will emerge, and you just kind of work your way through, and you're certainly not going to frame it or finish it in any way, and see if you like it. And if you do, then all right, now we'll get serious about it. We'll buy the chart I want to do and get the threads and go for it. But, yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's it's that 30-minute thing with Roberta Wagner. You're doing that. That's what, you know, you're being creative. You're trying something new, and you might find you really like. Because it is, to me, doing cross stitch is fills a different need than doing needlepoint.
Yeah.
I find it just making the little X's very relaxing if I'm stressed. So.
Yeah. And another thing is in needlepoint, usually you don't cut your threads. You determine, depending on the stitch, a length of thread unless you're doing basket weave. Which you could cut all your threads to the same length if you wanted to. But here with cross stitch, you can generally cut a bunch of threads ahead of time, all the same length, and just go for it. You don't have to say, all right, it's a Jessica stitch. I need 15 feet and I'm doing a road stitch, so I can just use a foot and a half. You can pre-cut threads to the same length and just go for it from there. Yeah.
Makes it nice.
All right. That's 20 minutes of what is really a simple thing. Get a piece of cloth, a thread, a needle, and make X's according to how the chart says.
Right.
Yeah.
But if you're new to it, it is overwhelming, and especially with all the information that's out there now and people doing it one way or another.
Yeah.
And if you get stuck, find a shop, find your local guild.
Yep. And the same start and end techniques you would use in needlepoint, pin stitches, away knots, all those things work in cross stitch too.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You can use the same techniques. You don't have to learn some new starting technique. No.
No.
All right, Jamie from California, hope that helps. If it doesn't, write to us and tell us how we confused you, and then we'll try to unconfuse you.
We'll try to confuse you more.
That really stopped me. You know, that there's so much information, it's overwhelming. And, yeah, you can start to see for such a simple stitching technique.
Right.
So... All right. Hope we help, Jamie. All right. Overrated, underrated, or we're going to run out of time. Inspirations Magazine.
Underrated. You have not done anything out of one of their magazines yet, have you?
No, I have not.
I think even though it's just mainly eye candy, you know, you're just looking through, you're reading, their patterns. You can work from their magazine. You can take one of their pieces and stitch it. They're beautiful. So, but it's not just the projects. So the stitch guides in there are fabulous. The articles are intriguing and interesting. You see so many different techniques. And they're beautifully printed and well made. Yeah. Highly underrated. You need them.
I'm with you 100%. That is a magazine. That's the way magazines should be done for needleworkers, period. Mm-hmm. Yeah, highly underrated. And I got, for the longest time, I got the digital version. And I would suggest, don't bother. Get the print version. Because you get the package of charts in the back, designs that you can pull out and cut up and trace over. And the magazine is just so beautifully photographed and printed that, yeah, get the actual magazine. It's absolutely worth it. Just, if nothing else, to sit in your chair at night and just leaf through it and read articles. It is so beautifully done.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And one of these days, we've got to get you to work a project from.
I know. Oh, and I know what project I'm going to work, too.
Which one?
Well, it's ooh, I knew I'd forget her name. I had it, and then I lost it. It's a coral reef thing with a clownfish.
Oh, okay.
We interviewed her. No, I know exactly the one I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I can put my hands on that issue right now if I want to. Yeah, no, I know. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's stuff in there. It's just so beautifully done and so easy to follow. Everything is all spelled out for you, how to make the stitches, everything.
Right.
And that, you know, that goes for their books too. I think all their books are highly underrated. They're just top drawer across the board.
And I didn't believe you. And I think there's one or two that I did not get. The passions for needlework. And I thought, I don't need these books in my house. Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
And they don't, and sometimes when they run out of a print, you can't get them anymore. Now I should probably start contacting some of the shops and seeing if I can get a copy. Maybe Kim has some. I'll have to contact her.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. So Inspirations Magazine, Inspirations, period. Highly underrated.
Underrated.
Yep. Top drawer. Yep.
Yes.
All right. Now this one is, I'm going to be interested in your thought. Needle threaders.
I don't use them. I think they're overrated.
I knew that.
I can thread right now. I still can thread a beading needle, any of those needles. That's what I used to, if I'm teaching a workshop, you spend a lot of time with newbies, threading their needle for them. And I hate giving them, I hate to say it, I hate giving people a needle threader because then you become dependent on it. It is a technique to learn to thread your needle. So I think they're overrated.
And I think they're underrated because I use a needle threader all the time. I get so tired of trying to get a thread in a needle. I get frustrated, and it's wasted time. Yeah, I have needle threaders all over the place. I just bought a bunch of them, and I just use them. I realize that, you know, if I'm a true needle worker, I don't need a needle threader, but I don't even try. I long ago quit. I just pick up a needle threader and use it, and my needle is threaded, and I'm off to stitching. So.
And we do, if we're, my guild, I say we, my guild, when we're teaching groups of people, we generally include needle threaders for that reason. People just get so frustrated over threading a needle. So if someone else has made, I don't often think about it, but if someone else has made up the kit for something, you know, I'm teaching, there'll be a needle threader in there for people because, yeah. And then I teach them how to use it because some people don't, you know, like, well, okay, what do I do with this thing you've given to me? I have no clue. And you have to teach them to use that. But yeah. I don't use one. But
yep. Use them all the time. And I have to say, I am in awe of people who can pick up a needle and thread and have that thread through that eye in a flash and they're off and stitching. It's like, how do you do that? Cause I have to line it up and I just get it all. I get so frustrated and you know, I'm sure you're one of them. Just pick it up.
Yeah.
Needle goes through the eye or thread goes through the eye and off you go. Yeah.
Right. And I don't know even beading needles. I can do them.
I'm impressed. I'm impressed.
Just had my eyes checked too, so they're good. So I was happy. Anyway,
beading needle. I'm impressed. Yep. And I know there's 50 different techniques. And don't write to me and tell me how I should do it. I've seen all the techniques. I know how to rub the thread and get it through the eye. I know all that stuff. Yeah. I just use a needle threader, really. I just don't want to deal with it.
Don't want to mess with it. As long as you know where that needle threader is, you're good.
I do. I have them invariably. There are three within reach at any given moment. Yeah. I don't. They're always there. Always there. All right. Okay. Needle minders. Last one. Needle minders.
I think they're underrated. I do. Now, those, I have several around me at all times because I tend to lose needles if I don't have a place to stick them because I just put them down. So needle minders are awesome. They're just awesome.
Yep. Yeah. Highly underrated. I would even say essential.
Mm-hmm.
For that very reason. It's too easy to lose needles. A size 28 needle into the carpet.
Right.
Yeah.
And you don't need anything. It's kind of fun to have all the pretty ones, something to match your needlework project or whatever. But I keep one on my lamp and I just plop my needle there because then I can see it.
Yep.
And there it is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go to the hardware store and just buy some magnet discs. You don't need to go fancy. Right. And if you start using them, you'll start to buy the fancy ones. That everybody does, but you can just go to the hardware store and get some magnets and one on one side of the cloth and one on the other, or like you said, on your lamp, and the needle goes on there, and they're just so handy. Your things are there, and for instance, hanging on your lamp, then take half dozen needles if you're doing the same color, thread them up, and just go, and. Yep.
Yeah. See, and I can never do that. Even if I'm using, doing something that's single color, I always have to put I just thread each one as I go. Each time I get a new needleful. Yeah. I tried doing that. And then I found myself cutting another piece of thread and threading a needle. I was like, oh, those are, it's just a mental thing, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I didn't think about it. It's just, and then they got messy and I had to throw the whole bunch of them away. So it's like, well, this was a waste of time.
No, I do. Yeah, I do that. If I've got a bunch of one color coming up in a piece, I'll sit down and take a half dozen needles and thread them up and then just keep going. Yeah.
Yeah, no. No. Because I don't know. I just go dig them out and do another thread. I don't know.
And Jamie from California, see, everybody does it different.
Everyone does.
Yep. No rules.
Yep.
And you and I have been doing it a long time. Still no rules. Yep. Everybody does it different.
Yeah. Whatever works for you. Whatever works.
Yep. All right. That's it.
All right.
We've done it.
All right. Everyone have a good Thanksgiving.
Yep. Yep. All you U.S. people, happy Thanksgiving. And, next Wednesday, we'll have a Stitch Hour on the YouTube channel. Jamie from California, if we haven't helped you, the Stitch Hour is a live show. You can join us for that and ask your questions right there, and we'll demonstrate.
Yes.
Yep.
Absolutely.
We'll make sure and have some stuff available so we can, but happy to show you.
Let us know beforehand so we're prepared.
Right. But happy to show you. All right, that's it. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.